Hi, it's Bob Garfield, and welcome back to Bob's Grill. All this month, we're revisiting some of OTM's most sizzling interviews. This week, James O'Keefe, the conservative activist who's used undercover sting operation videos to try to undermine the likes of Planned Parenthood, the Open Society Foundation, NPR, and the community organizing group ACORN. In that last one, ACORN employees are actually seen offering suggestions about how to hide prostitution income from the government. I spoke to O'Keefe in March 2011, right after his undercover video of NPR exec Ron Schiller had surfaced. Schiller was, at the time, a fundraiser for the network and is heard on the tape indicating, among other things, that he would accept money to run ads from a group that said it was founded by the Muslim Brotherhood. Schiller comes off as a caricature of liberal condescension. This thanks largely to misleading editing, distorted quotes, and a number of outright lies. If James O'Keefe was staging guerrilla theater to expose hypocrisy and hate, a la Sacha Baron Cohen of Borat fame, maybe that was no big deal. But Cohen is a comedian. O'Keefe claimed to be practicing undercover journalism in the tradition of Mike Wallace and other venerable muckrakers. In his quest for truth, to how much untruth is he then entitled? For example, this.
On the MEAC website, it said the organization sought to, quote, spread the acceptance of Sharia across the world.
Really? That's what they said?
Hear how appallingly unappalled Schiller was at the prospect of global Sharia law? Except he never did react that way. He'd uttered those words, really, that's what they said, in response to a restaurant employee's remark about their reservation. Previously, in the teaser video for the ACORN sting, O'Keefe is seen in a ridiculous circa 1970s pimp getup, complete with chinchilla cape, cane, superfly hat, and outsized sunglasses. He also wore that outfit in subsequent publicity appearances and left unchallenged the supposition that he'd worn the outfit into ACORN's offices. In fact, he did no such thing. When I spoke to him about that in 2011, he said the costuming was irrelevant.
This is often used by my opponents as a form of obfuscation. They say, well, you didn't wear the pimp fur inside the office. It wasn't about the pimp fur. If you see the first YouTube video, you'll see a scene at 22 seconds in where I'm walking into the office in slacks and a button-down. Well, pimp protocol requires you whore out underage girls. It doesn't require the wearing of a chinchilla fur.
Why use the pimp getup in the trailer to begin with?
Many trailers and bumpers on TV and for news programs use a variety of introductions, and I wanted to, you know, do sort of a funny, sort of zany trailer that would be a prelude to these comments made by these employees, maybe something as outrageous as their comments. I am, in fact, posing as a pimp. I am trying to help her establish a brothel and profit off of that brothel.
In fact, you didn't identify yourself as her pimp. You identified yourself as her boyfriend trying to protect her from an abusive pimp to get into the offices. And you talked about a run for Congress that you were hoping to make. It was only inside the offices that you actually started discussing with these corrupt employees the notion of importing Salvadoran women for a Chesapeake Bay brothel, correct?
That's right. In Washington, D.C., for example, I said, you know, I can use the money that the girl, the tricks from the girls perform, I can use those profits to fund my political campaign, which by definition would be pimping.
Do you mind if we now turn to the NPR sting?
Sure.
On your website, the headline is, watch the video, learn the truth. Then there is the pull quote from former NPR fundraiser Ron Schiller running down the Tea Party. But you took that quote out of context, didn't you? In the raw tape, which you also released, which got 1/500th of the page views that the short tape received, it's clear that in that passage, Schiller is quoting other people whom he identified as top Republicans.
I won't break a confidence, but a person who was an ambassador, so a very highly placed Republican, another person who was one of the top donors to the Republican Party, they both told me they voted for Obama, which they never believed they could ever do in their lives, that they could ever vote for a Democrat, ever. And they did because they believe that the current Republican Party is not really the Republican Party, but it's been hijacked by this group that is
the radical, racist, Islamophobic, Tea Party people.
And not just Islamophobic, but really xenophobic. I mean, basically.
Well, I think it's also clear that he's agreeing with them. In the later part of the statement, he states, it's scary. I mean, they are seriously racist people. You can certainly tell from his body language. And
but did you edit the tape and use that pull quote out of context to put the NPR executives in the worst possible light?
I don't think I did. We did release the full unedited tape along with our package, and you can try to focus in on one sentence in order to deflect from all the statements that Mr. Shiller made in order to do damage control for your friends. But the fact is that he made these egregious
James,
statements.
Isn't that precisely what you do? Isn't that precisely your modus?
No, I think we show these egregious statements on tape, and I don't think that anything is mitigated by that. It's a logical non sequitur for you to say, well, in the other parts of the tape, he said non-egregious things. Therefore, it exculpates him.
I didn't say that. You did. But what do you think the number one responsibility for journalists is when they edit, when they reduce, when they select? What should we be thinking about at all times when we do that?
Well, I think you should be choosing the relevant portions of the story that accurately represent the statements that were made. And what is the story? The story is the contempt and the disdain that Mr. Shiller has for Americans, for uneducated, in his words, Americans. The fact that there needs to be more educated elites, quote unquote, and the Republicans have been taken over by this Tea Party, which is characterized by this weird evangelical move. So there's this disdain.
Well, once again, you are quoting Mr. Shiller, quoting top Republicans. And by the way, on the subject of education.
That's not true. You don't have your facts straight.
Did not Mr. Shiller make a point to argue against the notion that conservatives were somehow less educated than liberals? Didn't he make a point of saying that he in no way holds that view?
Yeah, he also said that Republicans were inherently anti-intellectual and liberals more educated than conservatives. You're using a logical fallacy, focusing on something that happened that doesn't mitigate the things that do happen. And if you hold your logic up to any other reporter, if you make any other reporter live up to your own book of rules, you would completely discredit the genre of journalism. All journalists use excerpts to highlight the most egregious things made by their subjects. All Pulitzer Prize-winning journalism does that. Do you think when a reporter files a FOIA request and goes through to audit the university or the business or the publicly funded entity, he focuses on every single excerpt? Or does he focus on the excerpts that characterize the subject, on the unethical things that the subject does?
Your organization is called the Project Veritas. What does Veritas mean?
Latin for truth.
It's Latin for truth. And if you're moving tape around to even subtly alter meaning, if you're leaving out large chunks of reporting that would put an entirely different cast on reality, is that truth?
I don't agree with your assessment. I think we've been pretty accurate in the reflection of Mr. Shiller's statements, and he's even admitted he's made the statements, and we've released the full unedited tapes. Unless you can point to a specific thing in the tape that mitigates or exculpates the egregious statements made by the employee, you're just using obfuscation. You're just trying to deflect
James,
from those
statements. James, for example, there were no fewer than 6 times in raw NPR footage where Ron Shiller or his colleague took pains to tell you that, no, you cannot, for $5 million or any other sum, buy coverage on NPR. You cannot influence the news organization. And yet, that is conspicuously absent. Where you edited in his amused reaction to Sharia law, he had evinced no such amused reaction to Sharia law. In fact, it had been cut from one place and dropped in another. What is that if not obfuscation?
You're making mountains out of a molehill here. That was an introductory sequence change that broadcast journalists use all the time. But if you're going to try to mitigate all the dozen things he said by the supposed scene change of him sitting down at the table, it's a losing argument. People will see right through
it. It would be if that were the argument I'm making, but I'm not trying to mitigate anything Ron Shiller said. I'm trying to get to your tactics. So let's just recap for a moment the Acorn scenario. You lie to get into the offices. You lie subsequently about the lie you told to get into the offices. You edit the pimp shot into the trailer to create the illusion that you were somehow wearing it during your sting. You go on television wearing the same pimp outfit and let interviewers observe, uncorrected, that that's what you were wearing when you confronted the Acorn employees. If your journalistic technique is the lie, why should we believe anything you have to say?
Investigative reporters have used, you know, quote-unquote false pretenses, like To Catch a Predator, ABC's Primetime Live. Even Mike Wallace at 60 Minutes went undercover. You go undercover in order to get to the truth. Now, is it lying? It's a form of guerrilla theater. You're posing as something you're not in order to capture candid conversations from your subject. But I wouldn't characterize it as lying.
Who are your heroes?
My heroes include G.K. Chesterton, the British writer. I admire his common sense political philosophy. He's someone I really look up to. We look up to Mike Wallace at 60 Minutes. I think our methods can be considered a hybrid of many different genres, and that includes the undercover reporting of 60 Minutes and ABC News. There are elements of Gonzo. There's elements of Borat, which includes the guerrilla theater of Borat. So if you combine all these things together, I think you'll get a good sense for who we are.
Who are your enemies?
I think one of my enemies is the mainstream media. I think one of my enemies is the media which selectively edits everything and selectively edits out the truth about many things and willfully ignores subjects that they don't want to investigate. If the media was doing their job in this country, telling us the truth about public officials, telling us the truth about people, about events, we'd live in a much better world.
All right, James. Thank you very much for doing this.
You're welcome. Thank you.
James O'Keefe is founder of Project Veritas. In the 5 years since we spoke to O'Keefe, he's pulled many a meaningless stunt. For instance, he put on an Osama bin Laden mask and walked across the Mexico-U.S. border, supposedly to show how easy it was, although at the time, bin Laden had already been dead for several years. But he's never achieved another win like the Acorn takedown, if you can call it that. As a result of his videos in 2009, Acorn lost all of its federal and most of its private funding, forcing it to close for good. In 2010, the California State Attorney General and the U.S. Government Accountability Office released their investigative reports. They found that O'Keefe had misrepresented the actions of Acorn workers and that those workers had committed no illegal actions. See you next week when we'll be serving up another plate of charred to perfection barbecue right here on Bob's Grill.